Hello, I'm Adam and welcome to Tales from the Potting Bench, a gardening podcast where you'll hear tales and stories from the most interesting and different people from the world of both indoor and outdoor gardening. This season is sponsored by the wonderful people at Plant Grow, producers of award-winning organic fertilisers made with zero chemicals. Great for your garden and even greater for the planet. In this episode, we're talking about organic growing and the science behind food production with Mitch Grows as he takes on a brand new project.
I think you've just got such a distinctive style with everything that you do and the way that you talk about growing. It's just so kind of unlike everyone else. Have you always been that, or how did you come to kind of do what you're doing now?
I think, given the fact that I'm a chef, I have always had a connection with food, and it was quite a transferable skill. So I've always had that connection to food. So I've just been able to look at growing with that kind of chef's methodical way of thinking. Yes. So yeah, applying that into the garden, I believe, is what has give me that kind of out-of-the-box approach to modern gardening.
Were you a chef before you were a gardener, or did they, were they kind of mutually...
Well, yeah, so I was a chef for 9 years, but I've always had a passion for horticulture, specifically involving plants and fungi that can feed and heal us. My love for mushrooms come about from going out on my lunch break at work, and we would just go, we obviously, I'm from London, so I'd work in London, but we was quite close to Hampstead Heath. Right. So we'd go out on our lunch break over to Hampstead and, you know, have a beer, and we'd find these mushrooms that we were actually cooking in the kitchen.
Right.
And that was incredible. Like these, like sort of 40, 50, 60 pound a kilo mushrooms. And from then, I then started getting involved in foraging, and from mushrooms, I then started to forage for plants. Right. And then lockdown hit, and I was running a catering business of my own, and I had a lot of time to think, and I was like, does my catering business really make me happy? Mm. Does living in London in a studio flat make me happy, and having no access to outside space? And then I started to understand more about the bigger issue that we need to be connected to the earth. We need to be growing our own food, and we need to be more self-sufficient. So to live a more wholesome and sustainable lifestyle, I decided to, well, after speaking to my business partner, I decided to close my catering business and switched East London for the East Coast.
Right. So how long ago was that? Was that during the first lockdown or after the first lockdown?
I moved to Suffolk in August 2020. And that's when my growing journey began.
So you're coming up to, well, it would be 2 years this August then?
Yeah, 2 years this August. So this is coming into my second year of growing.
And is that the same time that you got started on Instagram? Did you kind of hit the yes. go button on Instagram at the same time?
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, I was running my business, my old catering business's Instagram. So right. kind of had a little bit more of an understanding into algorithms and when to post and all of that sort of hashtag strategies. And so I already had that sort of advantage that I wasn't just sort of going in blind, so yeah. to speak. I've just started a YouTube channel, and what I'm looking to, like this climate journalism that I'm looking to go into now, that's all going to be going on YouTube.
Wow.
And also with my new garden, I'm going to be posting a lot on YouTube because of what I'm currently building.
So you've swapped Suffolk for, where are you now?
Now I've moved down to Hampshire, just on the edge of the New Forest. Lots of forest for me to forage in for edible plants and fungi.
Yeah, nice.
The project that I'm working on, setting up, is part of a 4-acre project. And this is a bit of land which was up until 6 months ago was hard industrial agriculture, meaning it was plowed, it was fertilized, it was sprayed with all mixture of chemical cocktails. And two girls, Molly and Kate, have taken over the bit of land, and they're turning it into a 1-acre market garden, a 1-acre mixed native fruit orchard, and a 2-acre rewild project, mainly focusing on wildflowers to provide habitat for ground nesting birds. So I'm building a garden within that 4-acre farm, and my garden is a 14 by 14 meter space, and it's to show how quickly we can regenerate soil, how we can create a biodiverse habitat for the local insects and wildlife, and also grow an abundance of food. So those three things: regenerate soil, creating habitat, providing food.
How did that come about?
I met Kate at, I went to Charles Dowdin's quite a while ago for a course. And then I got quite friendly with Charles. And then I went back to with Jack and Alessandro, who is Jack's Patch and Spicy Moustache. We went back to an open day at Charles's. And then we kind of just like made friends with Charles. And we was then invited back a few times to do some volunteering, some salad picking. And then we went to a Christmas dinner at Charles's. It was like winter solstice. And Kate was there and we were speaking about what sort of project she was working on. And she told me that she wanted to build a small garden as like a showcase garden. And I said, I mean, that sounds like a brilliant project. I'd love to get involved.
Yeah. You've got a new plot as well, then, haven't you? Your own plot.
Yeah, so that's within the farm.
Oh, that's within that.
Yeah, so when people come down, so there's like a lot of local volunteers that are coming down, and it's going to supply the local village with food. So what it is it's when people come down and visit, it's really difficult for people to visualize this on a small scale, because you're looking at a 1-acre market garden or a 1-acre fruit orchard or a 2-acre rewild project, and people, they can't fathom that on a smaller scale. So what I'm creating is a place where we can create a happy environment in a space the size of your average back garden. So if you're an allotment holder, a home gardener, or a balcony grower, this space that I'm creating will be able to relate to anybody.
Wow. I think that's the thing about gardening in general. And I think that's the thing that, in particular, things like Instagram are really good for. I always notice this when I watch something like Gardener's World or whatever, is that Monty Don's garden is great and the gardens that you see on there are great, but quite often they're not necessarily relatable. Not everybody has got that masses and masses of amounts of space, but what we have got on things like Instagram and Twitter and YouTube are all sorts of different sizes of gardens, different, like at different altitudes, like in balconies and all over the place. And that stuff is really hard to then translate to your own particular kind of growing space, isn't it?
Absolutely. And like you say, the Monty Dons of the world, they also have lots of money, and that is something that the majority of us don't have.
Yeah.
And as we all know, gardening is so expensive. So I'd like to be able to show people that we don't need to spend hundreds and thousands of pounds to have a beautiful place to be.
So in terms of that space that you've taken on, when you said it's hard, it was previously hard agriculture, what does that mean for the soil that you're working with? Is it really tough?
That's one of the things that I'm particularly interested in, actually. And I'm going to be working alongside a soil scientist to be taking regular soil samples to find out what exactly is going on in the soil food web there and how quickly we can regenerate this depleted soil into a happy soil food web. Currently, I actually done a soil test on my previous garden and it was blinding. We had all sorts of good things in there, like amoebas, bacterial feeding nematodes, protozoans, and these are, it blew my mind. And to grow good, healthy vegetables, you want a bacteria dominant soil. If you were still wanting to grow a forest or trees, you'd want a mycelial dominant soil. Trees form symbiotic relationships with fungi. Plants don't. They like bacteria to break down things in the soil, and then the plants can access the nutrients, which is basically what bacteria excrete from the soil.
So what is this soil? Do you know what the soil is like where you are? Have you tested it, did you say?
So the soil has been tested. It's pretty bleak. There's not much going on in there. That's one of the biggest challenges that I will face, or we will all face on the land there, is trying to regenerate the soil. And that's our main focus at the moment. to do that, we're going to be applying loads of organic matter on top as mulch. We're going to be applying lots of different compost teas. So the soil scientist that I'm working with is a guy called Eddie from Rhizophilia. He will be brewing our compost teas, and he'll be looking at what he's brewing under the microscope to make sure that he's multiplying the right bacteria and the right microorganisms that we're going to be getting on our soil. So we're just going to douse in it with compost tea every couple of weeks. And the aim is that if one of those bacteria can stay in the soil, it can multiply. And it eventually they will start sticking around. Obviously, the first, second, third, they're all probably just going to die. But once they start to take hold, we can then start to regenerate the soil food web there.
What will you be able to achieve in like this, your first, I suppose, is it your first growing season? What will you actually be able to do this year?
So I'm going to just continue to, as business as usual this year, I'm just going to try and grow absolutely everything that I've got seeds for all sorts of things. I've just been given a polytunnel by Premier Polytunnels very kindly to as part of the project. And in there, I'm going to be growing tomatoes, melons, aubergines, chilies. And to try and amend the soil and trying to give us the best chance possible, I'm going to be using lots of seaweed. So that's one way I'm going to try and help amend the soil.
What is it about seaweed? Because seaweed has got, I won't say a trend, but I feel like we're seeing it more. What is it about seaweed that...
It's like a broad spectrum fertilizer jam-packed with beneficial goodies.
Right.
And one of them, it acts like a steroid, which boosts your plant growth above and below the soil.
Right, okay.
And one of the bonuses with seaweed is that it doesn't have any sort of diseases that can be transferred to soil-borne plants.
Right, okay.
So if you're bringing in sort of organic matter, like whether that be manure or compost, that can bring in pathogens. But with seaweed, there's no pathogens that can be transferable.
Right,
that's another bonus from it. So we've already got things growing there. I planted my herb garden, and there's over 5,000 trees have already been planted to create a new hedgerow. And I think about 200 fruit trees have already been planted, all rare heritage fruit trees. And they've taken quite well, actually. So to give them the best chance, we've just, on the fruit trees, we've been applying a small amount of manure, and that definitely has bacteria in, which can then start multiplying. And then on top of the fruit trees, we've put a wood chip mulch, and that will add in mycorrhizal fungi. Currently, I planted a perennial kale called Taunton Dean. I mean, it was looking a little bit sad in the pot from the move from Suffolk to Hampshire. And like, I mean, it looks like it's loving life. You know, because it has been ploughed and ploughed and ploughed, the soil hasn't got much structure. Yeah. But that doesn't necessarily mean the plants aren't going to survive. It just means that they might be prone to diseases and they can't produce enough complex sugars. So it's these complex sugars which help plants fight off the disease and pest. So if you was to have like brassicas, everybody covers their brassicas because they get absolutely hammered by cabbage white butterfly and slugs.
Yeah.
Now, if you was to have a brassica that was super high in complex sugars, it would actually be inedible to the cabbage white butterfly caterpillar. It just wouldn't be able to digest it. So it would leave and go somewhere else. And this is something that I'm learning from Eddie, the soil scientist. He's helping me understand these complex sugars and actually taking readings under a BRICS meter.
Right.
So you look at the sugars through this meter. It's a bit like a telescope sort of contraption, and you put it up to your eye and you get a reading. So yeah, vegetables with a high, or plants with a higher complex sugar rating, are more resilient to pests.
This is mind-blowing to me, a lot of this, because this is where kind of gardening or growing becomes science, and the whole thing is a science, but we don't necessarily know what's going on. And I think what amazes me is that presumably, completely correct me if I'm wrong, presumably you didn't know any of this a couple of years ago.
Dude, I didn't know any of this.
like what you're saying now, I've got no idea. I had no idea of any of this really, because that's not my style of gardening, but it's so interesting. Like how you've picked all of this up over 2 years.
Yeah, thanks. I think what it was is that I've always been interested in the food system, and I knew the food system was wrong, and the way that we produce and eat food is incorrect. And then understanding the food system and the way we produce food has helped me understand the science behind growing. Now, there is good sides and bad sides to science in growing. Like you are given three macronutrients, which are nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus. But we don't think about all of the micronutrients that go into producing plants. It's the same with the humans. We believe that to have a healthy diet, you need three things: carbohydrate, fat, and protein. And it's what about all those vitamins and minerals that, you know, that all of these dietitians, and it's so these three macronutrients have been applied to the same as the fertilizer industry. So the science says that you need to grow a healthy plant, you need this amount of N, this amount of P, and this amount of K. And it's just not right. It just doesn't work like that. What about, it's all about the soil food web and the microorganisms and what's going on under the soil. Plant feeding is about biology, such as no dig, and plants feeding through a symbiotic relationship, than it is chemistry, such as feeding a plant with a bottled nutrient.
Before all of this science, were you pretty adamant that you were going to do like no dig and stuff, or did you start off doing that, or how did that come about?
I was sat in my studio flat during lockdown, and I knew that I wanted to start growing food. I knew that the food that I was eating was killing me because it was full of chemicals. And then I started to research growing food. Even though I had no growing space, I was like, I'm going to educate myself on how to grow food. I was on YouTube and I was researching all various methods. And then I found a video by a man named Charles Dowden. And that moment changed the course of my life. I saw that introduction to No Dig, and I thought, this makes sense. In nowhere else in nature do we see things being plowed or disturbed. It's just harmony, working in harmony with nature, like the trees drop the leaves on the floor and it's broken down by the worms and the mycelial networks, and then that gets passed down and it feeds the plants. So that really resonated with me, and I was like, that's the way I want to grow. So when I started my garden, I was like, 100% no dig, 100% no dig. But in my new garden, I'm actually going to be inspired by Charles. I'm going to be doing a dig vs no dig bed, growing exactly the same crop side by side and compare how they grow, disease resilience, weights on harvests, and just note down every year how well it grows and compare.
But hypothetically, say you come out of that experiment and the dig bed is better, what do you do with that information? Like, would that change how you garden?
Well, I would have to see a continued I'd have to see continued results of the dig bed actually providing me with a better crop and healthier crop. But then I would also want to look at the soil food web and work out what exactly is going on in the dig bed, which isn't going on in the no dig bed, to understand why. And if all roads led to the fact that the digging was better, I would go down that route. But I know that it's not the way to go.
No, I'm sure that wouldn't happen. Guarantee that that's not going to happen. It's just, it seems bonkers that would ever happen. So Charles Dowding, for anyone that doesn't know, he's kind of like the godfather of no dig, isn't he?
Yeah, he is the godfather of no dig in this country. He actually learned, I'm not sure, it was a lady that he read a book, and she was over in America, and she had started no dig by mulching her beds with straw. He started to do no dig with straw, but then he realized that he was getting a lot of slugs And what he didn't realize is that where she was growing, I think it was in like Arizona or something, right, they actually didn't have slugs over there because it's very dry.
So dry, yeah.
So then he then developed the no-dig with compost and went down that sort of route. But no-dig is sort of, it's based on pre-industrial farming techniques. So yeah, he is the godfather of the word no-dig and the term no-dig.
Yeah.
For me, he's my biggest garden inspiration, you know. Yeah, just such a pleasure to be friends with him, you know.
So he's also a good chef, isn't he? He likes to cook with what he grows, doesn't he?
Yeah, Charles isn't afraid of getting in the kitchen and getting his chef apron on.
Yeah, definitely.
He's cooked dinner for me, and yeah, he's just I think he just has an understanding about the produce and how to use it. I think when you got such good quality ingredients, you don't really have to do much to it. Roasting vegetables is the best way to go, I believe.
Are you vegan?
I'm vegetarian. Yeah,
vegetarian, of course.
I eat eggs. I do occasionally eat some dairy, but yeah, I haven't eaten meat for some time now.
For a long time. I noticed that with some of the cooking. So that's the other side of what you do, and I think you do more of that than you were before. But some of the things that you cook genuinely just look amazing. I bet you, have you had some really good feedback about the cooking stuff that you do?
Yeah, I have had some good feedback. I think I would like to do more of the cooking stuff. And I mean, given the fact that it was my trade for nearly the majority of my adult life, I think I should probably kind of concentrate on that. I have had good feedback. I've had people trying out some of my recipes, which is quite nice. I'm always quite humbled when people say, oh yeah, I tried your recipe and it was good.
I think it's because you've got a really distinctive style with the way that you make those videos as well. They're like very quickly edited and do you know what I mean? They're really distinctive in themselves. And I think that's half of the thing with, even with like cookery programs and things, like is the kind of the fact that you're eating those videos with your eyes as well. That sounds really, you know, whatever the way I've just said that, but do you know what I mean?
No, it's so true. And I think I read something earlier that people actually spend more time watching people cook than they do cooking themselves. And that just tells you everything that's wrong with this world.
Yeah, that's it.
I'd like to think that the way I like to edit is just no frills, no spills. I'm not interested in special effects and all that. So I literally just want it to be made quick, simple. And it's mainly so people look at it and say, you know what? I could do that.
Try that.
That's my main thing that I want to show people is how easy cooking is. I think a lot of it's overcomplicated, and we're so far removed from cooking and actually getting our hands in the kitchen and just, we have to follow a recipe. A recipe is a philosophy, in my opinion.
Cool. Okay. So it's come to the time where I've got three tough questions to ask you. I say that they're tough. They're not tough questions and they're not going to make you tear your hair out, but they're those kind of questions where you've got to pick one thing. So number one is, if you had to, I'm going to have to word this slightly differently because of the way that you grow. If you had to redesign your plot, or so say it was your own personal plot with only one type of plant, so you can have multiple varieties, but it can only be one kind of plant, what would it be?
I think it would be alliums, just because they're one of my favorite plants, favorite genuses of plants. I mean, garlic is just super medicinal and it's super tasty. I mean, where would we be without garlic? Then you've got like onions, shallots, which are a staple in every kitchen. And then you've also got the beautiful ornamental alliums, which come in these crazy blues and purples and all different shapes and sizes, like the Christophies and the Giganteums. And so yeah, it would definitely be alliums.
And you can't forget stuff like chives as well. They're presumably part of the allium family, aren't they?
Yeah, chives. And I mean, there's all sorts of like wild garlic and three-cornered beef and crow garlic. For me, it's the best genus of plant would be alliums.
Good choice. Okay. In a similar vein, it's the same kind of question, but with a tool. So if you could, and this well, I don't know if this is going to be influenced by the way that you garden as well, but if you could only garden or grow with one type of tool, what would it be?
One tool. I think it would be my mobile phone.
You're not going down the conventional route.
No, I think it'd be my phone because it's not just a device where I can talk to people with. I can document what I'm doing. I use my phone for planting out. I know what I've got in what beds. It's a way of me keeping record of how well crops grew. And yeah, I just think that the mobile phone is a bit of an underrated tool in the garden.
Okay, and the age-old question, if you had to impart one piece of growing wisdom on a new grower, what would it be?
Don't be afraid to try new things. Just go for it. You know, that's your space. It's your place to experiment, and it's your place to find out who you are. Gardening isn't just about growing plants. It's about becoming more connected to nature and being in a happy, for me, it's being in a spiritual place where I can be at one with Mother Nature and truly experience the best of who I am. And I think that's what my advice would be, is just to let yourself go and do what feels right.
Mitch's new growing space is full of opportunity, and it's an interesting experiment to see what can be done on land that has been used for hard agriculture. You can follow him on Instagram at Mitch Grows, or you can subscribe on YouTube, where you'll also find him as Mitch Grows. Join me next week, where I'll have another fantastic guest from the world of gardening. Follow me on Instagram at View From The Potting Bench to find out who that might be.